Welcome to Spooky South Coast. Tim Weisberg here, along with psychic medium Stephanie Burke, and we are back. It feels like it's been months since we've been here.
I think it has been months.
It has been months, but we are back, and we are here to talk about the paranormal as we used to be each and every Saturday night, and I guess we'll be again, although we've got a couple Saturday nights coming up where we won't be here.
Right.
But that's okay. And we're going to start off, because a lot has happened in the time that we've been off. I think it's been since like April. So a lot has happened.
Really?
Yeah. And people that are out there in spooky South Coast land are like, why have you guys not been on so much? And I get it. I feel you on that. I understand. I shouldn't have made, by the way, I didn't mean to make that mocking tone in my voice. I love you all. I did not mean to mock you there. But I know I've heard it again and again. And the reason is, first of all, we've all been super busy.
Very.
But I got moved to the mornings here on WBSM. So I'm on at 6 a.m. every weekday. And so by the time Saturday night at 10 o'clock rolls around, I'm usually asleep.
It's definitely past my bedtime at this point in my life. So I understand completely. And we've said it a few times, like we'll be up talking late at night. And we're like, if we're up this late, we might as well do a spooky. And then we're both asleep. So,
I mean, here it is. You know, we're on the cusp of entering year 18. So I think maybe at some point we might have to look at possibly like recording the show during the week and airing it on Saturday nights. I know that's not the best thing for people, but it might be the easiest way to keep it going.
I think that that's probably a great idea.
We're getting old.
We are. I am for sure.
But of course, all that's gone on, we do have to start off the show with huge news. Huge news in the world of spooky South Coast. I bought a new jacket today.
You did?
No, you thought that was, you thought, you see what I did there?
I was actually thinking it was going to be the cologne.
Oh yeah, well the cologne too. But no, I see, that's, I'm being facetious here. I just wanted to throw Stephanie off. The huge news is, of course, that Secrets of the Asylum debuted yesterday on Fox Nation. Stephanie has her own television series now, her and Scott Porter together. Scott's going to join us later on in the program. We're going to do a deep dive into the show. But I just got to ask you, you know, it's been about, well, over 24 hours, because I think they released it at like 5 a.m. Were you
they
up
did.
At 5 a.m. to watch it when it
was
first released?
I was not, because I worked the night before. So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you had you had an event.
Yep. So I think I was up by about 7 or 8, and I was watching it by noon, or 11:30, I think. So
what has been the reaction from people? Everything I've seen has been overwhelmingly positive.
Overwhelmingly positive, completely. The messages that are coming in from people, whether it's a personal friend or someone I actually know or a complete stranger, has just been a novel, really. It's not just a, hey, congrats, or hey, I love the show. It's a novel of this feedback from people saying how authentic it is, how it's completely different than anything else that they've ever watched, how they enjoy certain parts of it and why they enjoy it. And it's really cool to read it and really watch what Scott and I wanted to come to life, actually come to life and have the reaction that we were really hoping for. We worked really closely with Rob Saffy, who is, I told him the other day, he's a genius. And to be able to watch his vision and his creativity come to life as well and have us all be on the same page with what we really wanted to create. And Rob said it for a long time that, you know, the three of us are creating something that we've all wanted to do. This is the project that we've all wanted to do for years and years and years. And not to knock other shows in general, not to knock any shows that Scott and I have been a part of, but we were really limited in anything that we wanted to do, really. Any creativity that we had, any ideas that we had. I watched Scott suffer far longer with it than I did. I would watch him talk to his production company and his crew, like, hey, I really want to do this so I can drive this home for the audience, and they would blow him off. And why? Who knows? It could have been a network thing. It could have just been like, that's not the way the world is going right now. You know how sometimes you're just a little too early for the game that's out there? And
yeah, I did that show. It's called Ghost Stalkers.
Yeah. So it's hard, but this is something completely different than anybody else has ever put out there. And is it a risk? Absolutely. Anytime you do something new, it is. But I think I kept saying the entire time, like, I think the world is ready. The world is ready to see something different in the paranormal genre, in the paranormal field, whatever it is that we want to call it. Because we're all just so used to basically the same show being made over and over and over again with a different title.
And we're going to get in. I have a lot of questions that I will save until Scott joins us later on. I interviewed you yesterday on the Tim Weisberg Show.
You did.
Or Thursday on the Tim Weisberg Show to kind of, you know, wanted to definitely make sure I was the first interview that you did about it.
Yes.
But, you know, we only really scratched the surface because at that time the show wasn't released yet. And even now we're not going to, there's not going to be any spoilers tonight. So you don't have to worry about that if you haven't had a chance to see it yet. But we are going to talk a little bit more in depth about it. I know that that audience in the morning is not a paranormal audience. So,
yes.
You know, there's different questions we can ask tonight. So if you heard the interview the other day, or if you read the story, just know we're going to go even deeper than that this evening. There was some other news that broke this week that we did say we were going to have a guest join us to talk about. We were supposed to have Johnny Hauser on, who is anybody that knows anything about the Villisca Axe Murder House in Villisca, Iowa. You know that he is the guy who, for I think like 20 years or so, has been investigating that place again and again and kind of running the paranormal side of things over there. He was going to join us tonight to talk about this big news, but he had a day for himself today where he was all kinds of busy and all straight out, and he's losing his voice. And he said, I don't think I can do the show tonight, but I will reschedule it. And so we will have him on at a different time to talk about it. But that big news is that U.S. Ghost Adventures, the company that bought the Lizzie Borden house in 2021, which is probably the most famous axe murder house in America, is now acquiring the Villisca Axe Murder House, which is probably the second most famous axe murder house in America. So they're going to have that in their portfolio of places. They recently had also purchased a place in Gettysburg, so this is the third haunted location alone, and from what they were advertising, they will be buying some other places as well. And in the time that we have been off, we didn't really get to cover the whole story with the Miss Lizzie's Coffee opening up next door. I covered that on my morning show. I had Joe Pereira, the owner of Miss Lizzie's Coffee, on. U.S. Ghost Adventures declined my offer to come on the program.
Shocking.
But the story has evolved to the point where if you haven't been following this, the Lizzie Borden house owners, U.S. Ghost Adventures, are actually they're actually suing.
Yes, they've filed
it's a complaint, but it's essentially a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to get Miss Lizzie's Coffee to have to change its name or, you know, be shut down, and then also give them all the profits they made since they opened on August 4th, and actually triple the profits is what they're looking for. So it's very, I was talking about this earlier today at my presentation in Westport. It's going to be hard to prove that there's a trademark infringement here, because you will have to prove that there's market confusion, that people will show up on Second Street in Fall River and look at the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast, and or the Lizzie Borden House as it's now known, and look at Miss Lizzie's Coffee and be like, I'm not sure which is which. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that they're going to be able to figure out which is the coffee shop that's only open for a brief amount of time every day and which is the place where I can actually sleep overnight. So it's not causing any market confusion. And then the other part of it is the trademark is just for the name Lizzie Borden in relation to restaurants mm-hmm. and hotels. It's not anything, any variation thereof. It does not say that term in the trademark, which means if they want to call it Miss Lizzie's Coffee, there's really nothing that can be done about it. The other part of it is he's filing a trademark complaint over the hatchet that they're using on the sign. And I read the trademark, and the trademark is a very specific design.
Yep.
So, as most trademarks are, mm-hmm. you can't trademark, like I couldn't trademark a beer can and then make it so that no other company could use a beer can that looked like my beer can in their marketing. So, it seems like it's going to go nowhere. I think that he and his lawyers probably know that. They probably just thought they could bully the coffee shop, which I'm not saying that I know things, but.
Okay. Well.
Well, you know, because people like to listen to this radio show and threaten lawsuits when they hear it, so.
Oh, that is true. That is true. I think I would very much enjoy having every single ghost tour across the entire nation draw up a lawsuit against U.S. Ghost Adventures for all of the intellectual property that he has stolen from them.
So we have talked about that, and, you know, we had to walk a fine line about it because we know people that it happened to.
Yep.
But yet, you know, we had no proof that we could offer necessarily. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you caught it, but the Herald News wrote a whole story about it.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't see
it? Awesome.
Yeah, they wrote a whole story about all the different tours that complained about that he stole basically, sorry, I shouldn't say stole. There was a few accusations of that, but it was mostly about how he infringed upon their copyrights.
Yep.
By coming in and calling his tours something similar and copying their tours. And also, here we are thinking, making the reference all the time, well, kind of funny that the guy's suing somebody for trademark infringement when he called his company U.S. Ghost Adventures, thinking that he stole the name from the show. But it turns out it didn't come from the show.
No.
He originally was talking, according to the Herald News article, he was originally talking to another company when he first was getting launched into this. Mm-hmm. That was called American Ghost Adventures.
Oh.
And so, which I'm sure maybe they were, you know, borrowing the term. But so after he decided not to work with American Ghost Adventures, he created U.S. Ghost Adventures. So maybe it wasn't the TV show, but it was still, it doesn't help.
It's still not his.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not sitting here bashing a person that I don't know. I am looking at the entire situation from an outside point of view. But at the same time, any ghost story that's out there is somebody's personal experience, right? They are all born somewhere. Are there some that have been around for hundreds of years and it becomes an urban legend and nobody knows where it originated? Sure. But when you have very recent stories, or you have familial stories, or you have personal experience stories, and suddenly, you're standing there telling your own personal story on your own ghost tour, and you have a group right next to you with some other random person telling your personal family story to a group of people that paid to be there. How'd they get it?
Right.
You know, how and why? You know, these people are not from this particular.
And it's not like the person on the original tour is saying, oh, and there's this story. They outright say, here's what's happened to me and my family.
Correct.
So it's, I don't know.
Something is serious. And you know how protective I am over my ohana in Hawaii. And those are sacred familial stories. Those are, that point, it's cultural appropriation. I'm sorry. Stay in your own lane. I wouldn't do it. I ask permission for everything that I do when it comes to the Hawaiian culture. Even if I don't need it, I still ask for it. I was told today, you should make a t-shirt with your tattoos on it. I said, from the person that I would need permission from. And I said, I would still come to you and ask for that because it's appropriate. It's what you're supposed to do.
You know, we didn't ask permission to tell the Pukwudgie story.
What Pukwudgie story?
Any Pukwudgie story. We've appropriated a lot of the native culture in this area.
Right.
But I always make the point when people bring that up, well, the difference is we're living with it. So it has become our story too.
I've had personal experiences and I only tell my personal experiences.
But it is something that we'll get into because I want to get into, you know, capitalizing on tragedy because you are going to have some people who are going to look at Secrets of the Asylum and say, gee, you guys are really kind of saying a lot of things about people that were involved in this that might not go over well with their families, with the people who are still alive around them. So that's certainly something that can, and some of it I have to talk to you about off the air.
Yeah.
Because for sure. Just because it would be a spoiler if I said anything about it. But the thing that bothers people about this Villisca purchase is the Lizzie Borden house has become, to a lot of people, overly commercialized with the paranormal. There was just a video that was out the other day on their TikTok where there was two people reenacting Mrs. Borden's murder, and it was not in a tasteful manner. I talked to some of the people that were involved in that, and they said, we were just doing what we were told to do. Now, the video has since been taken down because I shared it on Facebook, and it's no longer there. It's no longer on TikTok. So I don't know if that was somebody reported it for violence or if that was they decided to take it down because of any backlash or whatever. But now people are concerned because that's kind of been the MO to kind of glamorize and commercialize the things of the Lizzie Borden house. But now with Villisca, it's a different story. You had two adults that were killed in Fall River. In Villisca, you had eight people that were killed, including six children. So are those children going to become, you know, marketing tools now?
Probably.
Because the children at the Lizzie Borden house have now become fodder for this lawsuit, for this discussion. I don't know who was on the line, but I was holding off because I know that Scott was going to be calling in.
I actually told him I would tell him when we would.
So. Oh, okay. So let's take the call then. Good evening. You're on Spooky South Coast. Hello.
Hey, what's up, Mr. Tim?
What's going on?
Hey, so I got nothing political. It's actually I don't know if it's paranormal or not, but what's that? Like when you're sleeping, right? And then it happened to me when I was a kid, and I still remember it to this day. That's how like freaked out I was when it happened. But what happens when you're laying there and you're wide awake, you can't move, and then you just can't move?
That's sleep paralysis.
So that's is that.
Even if you're awake, here's the thing. You say you're wide awake at the time. So my question to that would be, when you say wide awake, like you haven't fallen asleep, or you're saying you've woken up?
I woke up from my dream and there was I don't know what it was. Well, it was along the lines of almost like an archangel.
Mm-hmm.
He had the bow and arrow and everything, and he was pointing it right at me. And I saw him in the corner of my room, but I couldn't move. Like, I just couldn't move my body, nothing. And, and then I ended up just, like, breaking out of it. And I woke up, and he was gone, and, it was pitch black in my room. But where the corner of the room was, it was kind of light because I had a street light that was outside my room when I was a kid. And it always shined in that corner. And, it was the wildest thing that I ever experienced, paranormal-wise.
So with sleep paralysis, what happens is a lot of times you come out of sleep, you come out of a dream, and you think that you're awake, but you're not 100% awake. And so what's actually happening is your body is still paralyzed because we kind of, when we fall into the deepest part of REM sleep and we're dreaming, our bodies paralyze themselves so that we don't act out our dreams. And so what's happening is you're still under that paralysis, even though your mind has woken up faster than the rest of your body has. And it's kind of carrying over those subconscious thoughts into reality. So it doesn't mean necessarily that there was something actually there or something actually keeping you from moving. However, there are some people who believe that in that realm of sleep paralysis, that is a time when certain spirits might show up and might try to, influence over you because they know that they can in that moment. So it's kind of a catch 22, and it depends on which side you want to believe. I can just tell you that I've had, experiences like that I know are pretty much just once I realize what's going on, I kind of shake myself out of it and I say, okay, my mind just woke up faster than the rest of my body.
Yeah. Well, I know when I grew up, I was real, strict Roman Catholic, my parents, And I kind of was always like the rebel child. Like I never wanted to go to church. And my mother was always telling me, God's watching you and, all this stuff. So I have a feeling like that all tied together to it. You know what I mean? Because he was, like I said, standing in the corner of the room, and it was wild, wildest thing. I'll never forget it. Never forget it.
I can see that why that would be the imagery that might come to mind in that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys, I'll be listening.
All right, thank you. Have a good day or good night. I'm so used to saying to John, have a good day, because he's usually my first caller every morning. And for those of you who don't listen to the Tim Weisberg Show, tune in, especially during the 6 o'clock hour, because John calls in and we usually battle back and forth. And then every caller comes in and is like, you're so rude to that guy. And I was like, yeah, but this is what we do. This is if we were sitting at a bar, he and I, we would have the same conversations and we would be friends afterwards. All right, so going back very quickly to the Villisca purchase, that from what I understand, it's still in the works. It hasn't been finalized. There are still some other properties, I guess, that they're trying to acquire that they're going to announce. So they kind of hinted that there's more to come with some of this. So, if you're interested in finding out more about that, you can stay tuned to the U.S. Ghost Adventure social media and to the Lizzie Borden House social media. I feel like I should give them a plug since I'm also going to criticize them for things too. So again, it's up to everybody what it is that they're willing to endure and what they're willing to go through. I just know that I had mentioned the story of the kids next door, and that has become a point of contention in the battle with the coffee shop, because Joe at the coffee shop says those children ghosts are absolutely here.
Mm-hmm.
And we encounter them here in the basement, which is actually where they were killed.
Mm-hmm.
The cistern that they were drowned in, These Eliza Borden's children that she drowned in the cistern is still in the basement. So this is the property where this happened. And I guess they don't like the fact that those children are now back where they were, you know, at the Lizzie Borden house. They don't like the fact that those children. So in all of this that's going on, I heard from multiple people. And when the stories were out there and there were comments on social media, we'll get to Scott in just a moment, that when you go on the tour now, some of the tour guides will tell you that Lizzie used to go over next door and play with her cousins who were later killed.
What? They're not even the same generation.
Those children were murdered 12 years before Lizzie Borden was born.
Right.
So I don't know if somebody's just kind of freelancing a little bit and taking liberties with the history on the tour, but I've had not only multiple people that have commented on that on social media, but multiple people that have told me that in person. So I have to believe that it's happening, and it's happening for more than one tour guide.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where this became part of the narrative, but it's historically and factually incorrect.
Correct.
So as far as I'm concerned, you know, that makes me question anything else that they're...
Sounds like a three-ring circus to me.
Well, we'll see what happens. All right, well, speaking of circuses, let's bring in the the third monkey of this circus.
Yes. So accurate.
So, again, I have to, you know, preface this by saying that Secrets of the Asylum is now available for streaming on Fox Nation. And before we get into this all with Scott, I just want to point out, I signed up for Fox Nation to watch this show.
Holy moly.
Now I'm going to cancel it before the 7-day free trial's over. But I signed up for Fox Nation. And if I signed up for Fox Nation in order to watch this show, so can you. All right, let's bring on the other star of that program, the one and only Scott Porter. Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Are your thumbs tired from responding to all the great comments that you've been getting on social media over the show?
Listen, I've got blisters on the tips of both thumbs. I'm going to have a port put in because I can't even feed myself now.
It's bad. It's bad. I mean, that's honestly all I've been doing for the last 2 days, but I'm having a lot of fun going back and forth with people and just being able to have that that feedback from them.
So,
and too, I think one of the things is that, like, everybody is still getting used to the streaming services, so they don't really fully understand how they work, or at least a lot of people don't. So we're trying to educate people and help them get signed up so they can watch the show.
And we were talking about this when we were driving here. You know, we were all on a phone call, and we were talking about this. And I don't think that this show people would have been super pissed if this show was on a network where they had to wait a week to see the next episode, because the way that each episode ends, it's the most bingeable paranormal show I've seen, because it is one continuous narrative. So you need to see that next episode. And so I think that, you know, when people look at that and they say, oh, you know, another streaming service that I don't have, and now I've got to sign up for it to get it, it won't matter, because you're going to want to watch every single episode of it. You're probably going to want to go back and watch it all again. And then, because I was telling Stephanie, I fell asleep, and that's not any fault of the show. There was just my own schedule. But then I went back and I rewound it to like where I kind of dozed off for a few minutes. And I went back a little bit further, and I was like, oh, I didn't catch that the first time.
Right.
There's a lot of that. So it's not only a bingeable show, but it's a very rewatchable show as well. And for you guys, you lived it. I'm sure you're watching it and seeing things that you didn't even realize while it was happening.
How many times did I say to you while we were sitting on the couch, Scott, like, I don't remember saying that.
Yeah. Oh, that's like happened in every episode. And I mean, like, I'm watching it now for the umpteenth time, and I'm still picking up on things that had slipped my mind, or little pieces that are connective tissue with the story that just didn't hit right the first time. And it takes all those different viewings to really pull it out so that you're like, oh, wait a minute. When we go back, we need to talk about this.
I think it was tough for me, too, because doing the reading part of it all, being a psychic medium, when I go into that mode, I don't remember everything I say anyways. So, and I know even when we were doing pickups at the end of the season, when we were filming the last parts of it with our showrunner, Rob Saffy, I remember saying to him at one point, and you probably remember this because you guys were laughing at me for it, but he had me repeat something I said on the show, because it's tough. When you're a female, you have your hair down, it rubs against your microphone, they don't get the full sentence properly, so you have to repeat it. It's you know, it's a normal thing in television. And I went to go re-record it so that way they could include it properly into the episode. And I looked at Rob and I was like, are you sure I said this? And he looked at me, he's like, Steph, I've watched that scene no less than 50 times today. Yes, you did. And I laughed out loud. I was like, okay, fine. But are you sure I said it like that? Are you positive I said it like that? And I don't remember half of what I said. I have no idea. There were times where, like, hey, we're going off, you know, on this thing. You said this particular thing. You connected with the spirit. I didn't even remember half of it. It was just a wild, wild feeling to be so incredibly immersed that I forgot parts of what I did.
It's funny because I'm watching it and I, like you said, dubs are a part of this. Like, they're always going to have to overdub some dialogue in some places. And I can actually pick up when the dubs are happening, when you're speaking.
Yes.
Because I'm like, oh, I can hear her nice and loud there. And yep. I know that had to have been a dub later because there's no way she spoke that loudly when there was a camera crew around.
That's so funny. You and Heather have been saying things like that back and forth because I think you two, yeah, besides Scott, are the absolute closest people in the world to me. And she called me at one point and had said, like, I know that this particular scene you had to redo for this reason because I know you. And if that was real, you know, at this point in time, like, you would have done this instead. And but the thing that she said the most was she had said, the fear in your face during some of this and your genuine reactions to things. She's like, it made my stomach sick because I know in that moment that you felt that particular emotion absolutely real 100% of the time. I feel like I don't want to give spoilers away about certain things because I'm sure not everybody has watched it yet, but when I just said that the scene, you know, being real, I was going to tell you a funny story, but then I can't because it'll spoil.
I will say this. We will have each of you, we'll set aside a night like 6 months from now,
yeah,
where everybody will have had a chance to have seen the show already and we'll have, and we'll warn people weeks in advance. You know, if you haven't seen it yet, watch it, because on this particular date, we are going to sit down and we're going to go through and really do a deep dive.
Yep.
But I want to get into some of the background of how it all came about, because I think people know already that, Scott, you've been on a couple of series, and Stephanie, you've been on some stuff before, and you kind of know how this works and you kind of know what to expect from this. But I remember we sat in the conference room here at the radio station and we talked about, like, if you guys were going to do something, what is it that you would want to do?
Yep.
And I'm taking my experience of being on the other side of things, and I'm listening to what you're saying, and I say, I don't think this is ever going to happen. I don't think you can ever get a show like this unless you're going to just pay for it yourself.
Yep.
And put it out there yourself. And I remember saying that, like, maybe that is the best way to go, to just create your own content, because I don't know that you're ever going to find the stars to align in this way to be able to do this. And sure enough, you did.
Right. And it was a total accident.
Yeah, I mean, well, we were, like, you know, we've had other shows come to us or other production companies come to us and wanted to do some different things. And they just didn't fit what we wanted to do and what we wanted to portray. I was literally sitting at home on the couch one day, and my phone goes off. And it's a director of photography who I had worked with before on one of the previous shows. I think we worked on maybe two or three episodes together. But when we worked together, like, we connected, we became instant friends, and Rob Saffy, I mean, he was the man as far as I was concerned. I mean, he's just a great family guy, you know, just a good heart, honest fella. And we just connected. And so when he reached out, literally he called me and he said, so what are you doing? I said, sitting on the couch eating Cheetos. It's like, no, I mean, he said, what are you doing paranormal TV wise? And I said, well, nothing right now. And he said, well, do you want to get back into it? And I said, I don't know. I really don't know that I want to get back into the TV gig. And he said, well, what if it's my show? And I said, like, you're the showrunner, you're the producer. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, I said, if I was going to do a show with anyone, I would want to do it with you. And so he said, well, let me tell you this idea I have. And so he started telling me what his thought process was and what he'd been thinking about.
And I stopped him in the middle of it, and I said, let me tell you what Steph and I have been talking about. And so as I was telling him that and listening to what he had to say, he said, we have to get her on the phone, and let's do this. He said, it's we're on the same exact page. And so we did. I called Steph and said, hey, listen, I told her this director of photography that I've worked with before, is a really good guy. And she's always like, well, you're a terrible judge of character. That's why I don't believe you. And I said, no, I said, Rob's good. Rob's cool. I said, you'll love him. I said, he wants to do a show with us, and let's talk to him. And that's how it came to be. And from there, it was like, we had the support of the production company. We had support from the network to do what we did. It was like, we want it to be real. We want it to be honest. We want it to be raw. And you guys go in and dig and dig and find out what you can find out and see if you can make the connections between the spirit world and the history.
And Stephanie, you mentioned to me the other day when you were on my morning show, mm-hmm. that, you know, you and Scott both didn't want to do the same kind of show that you had been doing or that people had been seeing on TV. Right. And I'm also going to assume, Scott, that, you know, in your conversations with Rob there, he was probably tired of doing the same thing. He's always, every show that he's worked on, he's tried to move the needle a little bit and make it a little bit different. And so you can tell that he's somebody who doesn't want to stay in the same lane and say, okay, we know there's a formula and we can make a show successful with that formula. He doesn't seem interested in following that formula.
He definitely is not. And I loved that every single thing that he came up with, or before we filmed every episode, before we really did anything, before we even stepped foot on set, we were meeting with him and discussing creativity. You know, what's this going to look like? You know, creativity, as far as it goes for us, we take absolutely no credit for any of those ridiculously awesome recrees that they did. But that was all Rob's vision. We would have a meeting every single morning when we came downstairs with him and our co-executive producer, Aaron. And then we would meet with Rob again before we started filming. And we would talk about what we wanted the episode to look like. I mean, the first one, no, because that was kind of just literally what you saw was a blind walkthrough. And right before I walked in, I remember we were in the car with Rob and we had said, you know, what do we need to do? Is there anything that we need to say? Because we're so used to that. Like, you walk up onto set, you go to start filming, you have to say certain things in order to really let the audience know, like, where are you? What are you about to do? You know? And he's like, it's Eloise Asylum. That's it. Go. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, great. Immediately at that moment, all of the world's problems fell on my shoulders because I realized that everybody was going to be staring at me for the next few hours. And like, Tim, you know exactly how much I love that. Attention is not my thing. So all of those eyes staring at me, I'm like, okay, that's nerve-wracking, number one. Number two, everything has fallen on me now in order to produce information, in order to kind of tell everybody, like, what are we doing? Where are we going? Where are the spirits? It's a lot of pressure at that moment in time. After that,
I'm going to interrupt you just for a minute. Yeah. I think my favorite phrase that Rob said when we got there, we asked him, you know, about what we're supposed to do, what we need to say when we go in here, how is this going to go? He said, let the spirits write the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I'm like, you know, that I couldn't have said it better. And of course, then we turn to Steph and we're watching her and we're waiting for her to kick us off so we know where to go research.
One of the other things he said that I loved the most, too, was if you have to fake evidence, you're just lazy. Mm-hmm. And I loved that aspect, and it made me trust him even more, because not only that, too, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, babe. When you work on most shows, or all the shows that I've worked on, and I can't speak for Scott, but I'm sure that he can speak for himself when it comes to that, most showrunners sit down the entire time and either direct or sit down with an iPad in a different room and just kind of watch everything and kind of like take note of what they might need in the next scene or whatever. Rob had a camera attached to him almost 1,000% of the time. Our production owner was on set with a camera attached to him the entire time that he was present. They were both cameramen. It wasn't, you know, your typical, like, we're better than you, we're going to sit back and kind of watch this from afar. It was in the trenches with us, directing when they can, but at the same time, just a part of it. And I just thought that that was a really cool thing that they were immersing themselves along with us.
Well, I was going to say, it would be a shame to have Rob Safi on set and not have a camera in his hands because he's one of the best eyes in paranormal television.
It's ridiculous.
In any television.
Amazing.
His vision for everything, and I kind of teased him for it the entire time that we were there, but I couldn't believe how he could just see this in his imagination and make it come to life perfectly the first time. It was so impressive to watch him work and to watch him connect the dots where sometimes I couldn't even see where they were going to connect, but obviously my job was far different. So he would put it together. I'm like, how in the world? One of my other favorite parts too is he would have secret phone calls with all of us. He was like Charlie from Charlie's Angels. And he would secretly call Scott if he wasn't present at that moment in time. He's like, are you with Steph? Walk away from her. Because he had to tell him certain things that I wasn't allowed to know. And then he would secretly call me and he's like, are you with Scott? He's like, no. All right, walk away. And we would just kind of go over our plan for what creativity looked like for that particular night, you know, and really go from there and just allow it to flow in the way that it should, as if a real investigation is unfolding. You know, if we were all to go out to a place right now and investigate for the next 8 hours, what would that look like? You know, and they took, I think I told you, we were probably there for a total of at least 6 weeks. And they took 6 weeks and basically made it into 6 nights and allowed it to flow in the way that it should.
And, you know, you mentioned that it's as authentic of an investigation as could be presented, but Scott and I both know that's not 100% true.
Okay.
Because they didn't show you having to stop to get something to eat first before, because you need to build up your energy.
And after.
They did show us in the diner, though, afterwards.
Yeah, but she doesn't have anything in front of her. I that's the first thing I looked at, is what she eating, and there was nothing on the table.
So one of the...
We told them she needed a burger.
Rob had said his dream shot and his dream scene is me just chowing down on a giant greasy cheeseburger after an investigation, and he wanted to do it
Definitely
so badly. He talked about it the entire time.
Well, that's going to have to happen in season two.
One of the things that we also talk about authenticity, we sat in that, I think it was that diner, wasn't it, babe? And they put coffee down in front of me.
Yep.
And you were like, we got to get rid of this. Like, anybody that knows her, when they see this, will be like, this entire show is fake because she has coffee in front of her.
A Pepsi.
Yeah, so they replaced it with, like, Coke or Pepsi.
So I have to ask, because you've both kind of used this word, and it was something that stood out to me. First of all, the name of the program is called Secrets of the Asylum. It's about the Eloise Asylum, that's why. But it's called Secrets of the Asylum. The word ghost is not in the title. And neither of you, at least in the four episodes I've made it through so far, neither of you have uttered that word. The only time I've heard it was from the former employee that was talking with Scott, but and that was in one of his testimonials. I've never heard you utter the word ghost on the show. Was that a conscious effort?
I don't think so.
I think it's just how we speak.
I think it's us.
About what we interact with and what we work with. I mean, we're there to communicate, to connect, and to tell a story.
Right.
And that's what we've always wanted to do, is to deep dive into who these people are. They're people. They were living, breathing human beings, and we don't want to treat them different just because they scare some people. You know, we want to be able to say, hey, why are they here? Why are they still trying to communicate? What are they still trying to get across to us? And we don't want to treat them any differently. So they're people.
They are. And I think when I say spirit, because I think that's probably what we refer to them as, are the spirits of the asylum. These people that are lingering around are a soul, just like you and I, only we're still in physical form. But we have a soul inside of us. We have a spirit. We have an essence. And I think that working in the realm that I do of death and grief and, you know, being a psychic medium, I think I refer to it as that so often. Even when I'm teaching Reiki classes, I talk to people about soul essence and spirit and all that stuff. So that could just, it's a me thing, I think. And I honestly can't say that Scott gets that from me. I think that the two of us were both like that, and we just kind of came together. And
that was the reason for the question, is it wasn't, you know, me saying you're trying to differentiate yourself from the other shows, that all are ghosts something or other. I just felt that by using that term spirit, it brought a lot more humanity to who it was that you were interacting with.
And that's what we wanted. That was a serious effort on our part, not saying it that way, but in general, just bringing that part out for people to really understand, like, what's important in this realm, and at the same time, like, kind of what not to do, if that makes sense. You see a lot of these shows, I mean, I won't name them, but, you know, some people get really upset when there's people or investigators out there provoking spirits or yelling at them.
You're talking about Ghost Adventures, yeah.
Or, you know, being possessed all the time, you know, things of that sort. And even on other ones, you know, people get really upset that you're going in and you're basically going in for a thrill, right? Most of these shows, and I can't say all of them because there are some really decent ones out there, but some will just go in and they'll say, you know, did you hear that? Or something happened to me. And then they're gone. And they're gone to a different location on the next hour. And there's no sit down with the owners. Like, hey, this is what we found. This is what we think's going on. This is how you can help yourself and help them. Nobody ever helps the dead.
Well, I mean, you're going in, Scott, on the premise that you're there to help John and Adam, the owners, because they want to be able to further utilize this property. But it very quickly turns away from really necessarily about helping them. Certainly don't lose sight of that, but it's also more about telling these stories and sharing the stories of these people who were the patients and those who suffered at Eloise.
It really is. And, you know, throughout my years of investigating, one of the big things that's always bothered me, and Steph just mentioned it, people go in, they investigate, they get a little bit of interaction, and they come back to the people and say, yep, your place is haunted. Good luck. We're off for the next one. And for me, my questions were, you know, who is it really that's communicating with you? Why are they saying the things and appearing in the places that they're appearing and saying the things they're saying? Is there a deeper story, or is there something more there? Is there something they're trying to get across, and these are the only pieces of information they can get to you with the energy they're able to muster? And no one is going and taking that and trying to dig into the history or dig into their stories and find out if there was something that was erroneous in the history of in their history, if they were wronged or something happened to them that wasn't told right. You know, are they wanting to write the story?
Right.
They want to correct things. And in this show, you see that.
I was going to say, we're just up against the news here, but I definitely want to dive deeper into that in the next hour. I want to dive deeper into some of the experiences that you had and the way that it obviously changed you as people. I know that because I was talking to you as you were, you know, filming and coming back from it. We'll get into all of that. The show is called Secrets of the Asylum. It's available right now for streaming on the Fox Nation app. If you don't want to listen to the second hour of the show and you want to just start watching it right now, we won't fault you. You can listen to the podcast later on, but it is that good. You want to drop what you're doing this weekend and sit there and binge all six episodes. But we are going to take a break. When we come back on the other side, we'll talk more with Stephanie and Scott. We'll talk more with you at 508-996-0500. We'll also tell you how you can actually watch at least the first episode of Secrets of the Asylum with Stephanie and Scott, coming up right here locally at a very special event that you can take part in. And we'll also tell you how, if you want to go and experience Eloise Asylum for yourself, you can actually do so. And you're going to be able to do that with Stephanie and Scott and some other guy. And we'll talk about that as well when we come back. So more with Spooky South Coast in just a few moments.
You are listening to Spooky South Coast with Tim Moniz and my mom.
back. Hour number two of Spooky South Coast. Tim Weisberg here, along with psychic medium and TV star Stephanie Burke. And also on the line, we have Scott Porter. And just before we launch back into the conversation, that was a familiar voice there leading us into hour number two.
It was.
Oh, how about I turn on your microphone? There we go.
It was. That was my nugget.
And now officially a radio star herself.
That's hilarious. I love it.
I also did one for my morning show, and I run that every now and then, and people will say, "Who is that?"
Did they really?
Oh, yeah. People are all asking who it is, so.
Do you tell them?
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, we're gonna make her famous before she even gets a chance to work here. Which, does she still want to? I know that she was all about it.
Everyone that she meets, she tells them that she's going to be a radio person with her favorite radio person, Tim.
No, there you go.
Everyone. Doesn't matter. Like, she'll, just strangers, she'll tell them.
We'll have to have her come in and do a whole show some night when she can stay up.
Yeah.
Remember when we used to do those early shows sometimes, like before the Red Sox? We would come in super early and do it at like 6 p.m.
I didn't hate that, you know.
No, yeah, those actually weren't bad.
No.
I don't know. Well,
can we do like spooky South Coast old people version because we're old now, so we can just come in at like 7 and 9?
If only I knew the person that was in charge of scheduling things on the radio station.
Brand manager in this place?
Can you change around the schedule maybe? I don't know. Maybe that's something we look into. Maybe we do it earlier. I don't know. We'll consider it.
I like that idea. At least, you know, consideration.
You know, for Scott, it doesn't matter. It's a whole hour earlier where he is.
I know. And I just came from there.
It is.
We were just having this conversation today. Like, when I go from Central to Eastern, I get so confused, and I asked him if it was the same for him, and he agreed, so.
And during the course of the discussion, if you have any questions that you want to ask Stephanie and Scott about Secrets of the Asylum, no spoilers, though, please. But if you want to ask some questions, 508-996-0500. You can also send them in via app chat on the WBSM app, which is, if you're not familiar with, it's just an easy way to be able to text us here in the studio, and I can read them on the air. Anna checked in via app chat earlier when we were talking about the different places with U.S. Ghost Adventures. She said sadness about those places. Also, Cooper in North Attleboro sent one in that I'm gonna relay to Stephanie here before we get back into the discussion about Secrets of the Asylum. Cooper says, when I was a kid, I used to have a lot of dreams in which I could fly. And at the end of some of these dreams, I would end up by floating down into my bed. These dreams stopped happening when I got older. Is this very common? Have you heard of these types of experiences? And do you think I was having out-of-body experiences?
Yes, we all do when we sleep. You know that really god-awful dream where you're falling and then you wake yourself up by jolting? We'll call that a crash landing back into your body. It's astral projection. We all travel. So sometimes people lose sight of how to do that as they get older, because basically the same reason that we lose abilities too. If, you know, you have any type of psychic or mediumship abilities when you're younger, self-doubt creeps in. We're all trained to doubt ourselves, even by simple things like, did you make your bed this morning? And even though you know you did, you know, your parents
ask you. You don't know me very well.
I don't make mine, but, you know, if someone, you know, that you love and trust is taking care of you and you have to go answer that, you think to yourself for a minute, like, huh, did I? And you have to go back and check. Our brains are literally programmed to push out the short-term information and, you know, just kind of, it's almost like I was going to use an analogy, but I'm going to call myself old this too, but, you know, like your VHS tape, like you don't have enough left, so you just kind of like record over what you already recorded. And it creates this wicked circle of, or hamster wheel of self-doubt in ourselves. So we just kind of lose the ability because we get distracted with everyday things.
But Cooper could certainly learn how to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there you go. Well, we're going to get back into discussing Secrets of the Asylum. It is now airing on the Fox Nation streaming service. And of course, if you don't have it, if it's not something that you've already subscribed to, you can sign up and get a free 1 week trial. So you can do that. And then I think it's, you know, $5.99 a month after that. So that's not that big of a deal. They have a lot of programming that you might be interested in, aside from Secrets of the Asylum. So it's something that you can check out. Also, if you are a first responder or if you're a member of the military, active or veteran, then you get a free year of Fox Nation when you sign up. So you can have plenty of opportunities to watch Secrets of the Asylum, all six episodes, binge them, then start from scratch, rewatch them all again, and go through them all. And Scott, I've got to ask you, as you were, because being a veteran of television and going through multiple series now and working with different showrunners at different times, that you've really been there in the nuts and bolts of it all the time. Did you know as you were filming this, aside from the great things that were happening, and we'll get into that, but just the process itself, did you know that this was going to be something that was going to be special?
You know, I think that as soon as we started making those connections and you can feel your personal emotions become touched by what you're digging into and what you're discovering, I think at that point I knew that we were really touching something that was going to be different. Because, you know, I've been on the shows where you go in, you're looking for the noises, you're looking for the captures on camera, you're looking for the voices, the recordings, and, you know, it's not emotional. But this one touched the emotions. It resonated with me. I mean, there were children involved, and you know, that really brought it home for me. And as we were able to find answers for those or find those connections in history for those spirits who are reaching out, that made it even more real. And I knew then that we're onto something, and if we can make it connect the dots, it's going to be unbelievably great when we get finished.
And here's what kind of stood out to me as I was watching it, and maybe it won't for a lot of people that... So I'm going to share a personal story from Stephanie that she told me a long time ago that I don't know if we ever really discussed on the air. So forgive me if I'm, you know, giving out stuff that we haven't talked about before.
Okay.
But you and I had a conversation a long time ago about, yes, you have these abilities, but mm-hmm. that you also wanted to be taken seriously as a paranormal investigator, mm-hmm. that you weren't just about being a psychic medium. And what I noticed in this series is that, you know, it says it in the show description, paranormal investigator Scott Porter and psychic medium Stephanie Burke. Mm-hmm. But yet during the course of the show, you are just as much of an investigator as you are a psychic medium. You are doing the same things you would do on an investigation without utilizing your abilities at the same time, or doing it, but also not letting that be the thing that's front and center in that moment.
Right. I think it's tough because in certain particular situations, and probably why we talked about it, was that a lot of people just assume that I'm just that person that walks through and I give information and I leave. And a lot of people would talk to me like I had no knowledge of how paranormal investigating works. But as you know, I got my start in all of this by paranormal investigating and hiding my abilities, mm-hmm. because I just loved ghosts and history and I wanted to learn. And I know a lot about equipment and how to investigate. I would say I know more about like original equipment that we all used a long time ago. The stuff that comes out nowadays is pretty much the same basis. It hasn't really changed much at all since the first, you know, days of doing this. It's just a little bit more technical now. I will tell you a funny story from the show that will contradict everything you just said. They left me alone at one point in the show, and I won't tell you at what point because I don't want to spoil it for you or anybody else at home. But they separated us all and forced us to investigate by ourselves. And I fought to have a Melmeter with me because the particular spirit that I was trying to connect with really reacted to equipment like that made noise. So I was like, I need to have this thing. So I stole it from the guys. I was like, look, I need something up there with me because relying on my abilities for the next hour is not going to do me any favors. And it'll do me favors, but it won't do anybody else any favors is what I should say. So the tough part about being a psychic medium and only having that particular skill set is you can talk to the spirit all day long and you can get that back and forth conversation. But somebody like yourself or anybody else watching from home, that's it. That's all you get. I wanted something to show something physical as I'm having these conversations so people can see that my abilities are helping to lend to this conversation, but it's also reacting for your, you know, viewership as well. And I also love the point of having the historical documents back up every single thing that I say as well. I don't want to just go in and tell a crazy story and then nothing can be validated. I want to see a historical document with the words that I said come out of my mouth on paper. So I'm left alone with this Melmeter. And I had my co-EP and my director of photography with me alone in this very, very dark hallway. And going back and forth between mediumship mind and logical mind is not easy at all for, I think, most mediums that I know. But I'm in this mode. I'm exhausted. It's probably, babe, what time was that? 2-3 o'clock in the morning?
It was late.
I was exhausted as it was. We were nearing the end of the 6 weeks that we were there. So we were already beat up by this place to begin with. And I go to put it down and I realize I didn't turn it on. So I'm trying to communicate and have this conversation. I didn't turn this Melmeter on. I go to pick it up and I go to turn it on. And I'm messing with the thing, and I have no idea how to turn these brand new Melmeters on because I haven't used one in a long time. I know the original ones that didn't have all those crazy features on them. And I laugh, and I'm talking to my co-EP, and I was like, dude, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I have no idea how to turn this thing on. And I realized in that moment how incredibly dependent I became on Scott because I am a very independent person. However, if I'm with him, he insists on doing everything for me like that. So I laughed. I was like, either we have to run downstairs and blow up his investigation and have him turn this thing on or what? Because we were both trying to figure it out. And we were laughing about it because we're like, what the hell are we doing? I eventually figured it out. I needed light. I needed to, you know, just sit in a moment of like exiting all spirits out of my brain so that way I could focus. But I'm like, yeah, that's how good of an investigator I am that I forgot how to turn on a Melmeter.
Well, you mentioned, you referenced there the relationship that you have with Scott. And Scott, I know that this is something that in other TV shows, you know, they try to make it look like people are having these relationships they might not have. Like, hey, these guys are all like, you know, they hang out. And then sometimes some of these shows are just people that are brought together. But I know that you and Stephanie both talked to me about how your relationship would have to be part of the narrative of any of these shows. It would have to be something that you wouldn't want to hide because that relationship has brought out so much more in each of you as investigators. So what was your thoughts of that, of being able to portray that on screen? Because you're the one that reveals it on screen when you say, and she's also my girlfriend, which is probably going to be, you know, that's a t-shirt opportunity if there ever was one.
There's many t-shirt opportunities coming from this show. I'm going to tell you that right now. But you know, I mean, I think the thing is in our relationship, we've been able to experience phenomenal, interactions or occurrences that we experience together. And I think it's because we are together. It's has something to do with this interaction in the cosmos that happens between us and bringing that to television and allowing that to be part of the story and part of the investigation. I think it's fundamental. I think that I get a question from a lot of people at times about, you know, how they're able to connect with spirits or how they're able to see spirits or communicate with spirits. And I said, you know, you need to know who you are and what you are, and that'll tell you some of why you're able to connect so well. And I think in our case, it's like, we're like the old cartoon. What was it, babe? The ones that the powers combined.
Wonder Twins.
Yeah. Thundercats or whatever it was.
Wonder Twins.
The Wonder Twins from the Justice League, the Super Friends.
Yeah, that's it.
Wonder Twin powers activate.
Like, yes.
That's it. And so it's like when we do that, it's like we connect. And you know, it's interesting because if we didn't show that on the show, then we'd have to be fake, and neither one of us are very well at being fake. So then you just wouldn't have the show that you have now.
No, and I actually think that they cut out a lot of our relationship stuff. It was very hard to call him Scott on camera, and I'm sure you had the same struggle. Because it's so easy to just be like, hey, babe, you know, what's going on?
There was a babe on camera.
Oh, I think it was him that said it to me, yeah. And probably because he just didn't say my name at all during any of those cuts for that particular scene. But I don't know if they caught me saying it at all, but I did. But there were times where they made me say Scott because it's so automatic, especially again in that mediumship mind, like trying to just communicate the way that you normally do. There was conversations that we had, even when we were doing our interview separately, that they asked us about our relationship because they weren't sure what direction the show was going to go in. So we answered questions about each other. Those are still sitting out there somewhere and might be used at some point. There was a scene where, as I was going off by myself, he knew I was absolutely terrified at that point. They were sticking me in the absolute worst section of the place alone. And I understand why they did, but it was still terrifying because this place was very unpredictable. We saw what it did to our cameraman during the first episode. We knew what it did to us both mentally, emotionally, and physically. And, you know, our crew, like our Rob was standing there at one point just filming the show and had something thrown at him. So there were dangers to what we were doing. And I think he hugged me and kissed me and like didn't let go for a minute because he knew like I was absolutely terrified and he didn't want me to go upstairs by myself, but they cut that out.
But it must have been hard knowing that the two of you have a shorthand and almost a psychic connection where you don't have to say a lot of things.
Yeah.
And now you have to say these things because it's not going to play for the audience if you don't.
There's been so many times where I've noticed we don't physically communicate, or we do physically communicate, but only like half the time. And the other half is not out loud for everybody else. You might be able to speak more to that too, babe. But
I mean, there was times when we were filming, and you would look at me and you'd say, "You heard that, didn't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah." You know what it said? I'm like, "Yeah." And we're just like, we just keep going back and forth. And they're like, "Okay, you've got to tell us what it was because we can't hear it."
We're just so used to each other. We're in like our own little bubble. And then we have that weird connection too. I actually think there was a point in time where Rob commented on that weird connection because he saw it happening. So we tried really hard to be what people would consider normal. I don't know if I did the best job, but I really tried.
Well, and Scott, you also took on a protective role. You know, obviously I know that you have that protective role with Stephanie in real life, but also even with Ryan, who is there investigating with you as well. Like you were the one that was making that call of, okay, I think maybe this is the time to get out of here.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of people and I've seen physical interactions before, but when you're sitting there and you're looking at someone, And they're not moving in a way that would cause an injury. There's no one behind them that can cause an injury. And all of a sudden, you see this happening. I mean, that was really unnerving. You know, that was one of the things where I sat there and I was studying for a minute and like, okay, is this real life? Because I've seen people show scratches before or shown things before like that or physical interactions.
No spoilers.
And there's always, I'm not spoiling,
it's in the trailer.
It's in the trailer.
Yeah, you can see it.
I can see it. So when I saw that happen, you know, it's like I'm seeing it and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Let me digest this because this is getting real for all of us now. Like we had heard what Stephanie had been talking about and I was thinking about what she had said and seeing that happen, it's like, okay, wait a minute. We need to regroup and get ourselves all calmed down, back together, and then come back. Because right now, this thing is trying to separate us and get us out of our mode of grounding, of being grounded, and where it can do more damage. So let's back up and let's regroup, and then we can come back in here.
We're going to take a phone call here from a listener, and 508-996-0500 is the number. I don't know, Scott, if you'll necessarily be able to hear them, but we can relay the question if we have some issues, because we weren't using this phone system the last time that we did Spooky South Coast.
Right.
We had the other phone system.
This one's ancient.
So let's see here. Good evening. You were on Spooky South Coast. Hello.
What's shaking, Playboy?
Oh, hey, I cut off Scott because I forgot to lock him in.
Hey.
Hey, Lamone.
Hey, Scott. How you doing? Hey, about time to see you guys are back. I'm so shocking to hear you guys. I think it's kind of like clones or something like that. But it might be. But I heard the baby, so the baby sounds. Could she be possibly cloned also? Could that be a case? A family of clones?
Like are you a clone family, Stephanie?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
You know what? The oldest living thing on Earth is the king clone creosote plant. It's out here It's out here in the basin, out here in the Great Basin, out here like near Joshua Tree. And it's the oldest living creature, that's the oldest living. It's a plant. It's a king. It's called king clone creosote. You know what a creosotes are?
Yeah, those are like those. We know what creosotes are.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, but it's like 11,000 something, 11,700 years old, and so that's older than anything else I can think of that's going on right now. So I was thinking you guys would have like eye candy there. I guess you guys didn't bring Matthew there. Matthew Moniz back.
Moniz is actually doing an event tonight. He's speaking to the Masonic Lodge in Wareham about the paranormal.
That's good. The lodge doesn't have experience with that there.
Oh, they do, but him and Andrew go there every year and tell some ghost stories. So, Lamone, I got to ask you, are you going to watch Stephanie and Scott's show, Secrets of the Asylum, on Fox Nation?
Darn tootin'. Isn't Fox Nation also the thing that used to have like a Strange Inheritance? You know that show, The Strange Inheritance?
I'm not sure.
I have no idea.
It's like the business and Fox Business. And
well, this is a streaming service. This isn't a network on the cable. So this is a streaming service you have to sign up for.
Well, this is CDM. That would be more than enough to put a little money out there. I'll definitely do that.
Free 1 week trial.
Yep.
Literally the only thing I'm going to watch on Fox Nation.
And I'm going to watch Frasier back on again. So that'll be good. So, well, I'm thinking like maybe you and Scott want to come to Las Vegas sometime. So many concerts like tonight. I'm not there right now. Today we had Green Day, Blink 182, The Offspring.
Lamone, Stephanie doesn't even know about the time that you called into my morning show while you were locked in Lady Gaga's bathroom.
Well, let her know. This is a great place for the spooky side. Wouldn't mind sharing the spookiness.
He spent the night with Lady Gaga in her hotel suite when she was doing her residency out there in Vegas, and he called me from her bathroom. She's knocking on the door, asking him to come out, and he's like, no, hold on, I'll be out in a minute. But meanwhile, he's talking to me on the phone.
Okay, then.
He chose me over Lady Gaga. Can you believe that?
Yes.
But Lady Gaga got her hands, got me in person, so just on the phone is one thing, but she got me in person. So it's like... have you heard their new album? That new album, the Rolling Stones have?
Not yet. No, just the single that they put out. Lamone, I'm gonna wrap it up with you because we got a lot to cover with Stephanie and Scott about their show.
I was thinking if Stephanie and Scott decide to come, maybe they could bring Amanda from Lizzie's house. Bring out here because I'd like to have her come visit.
Spooky New England, Amanda.
Yeah, you supposed to talk to her last time you went to go see her, but no, totally forgot about it, didn't you?
I did not forget about it. No.
What'd you say? Oh. Black guy tripping.
No. All right, Lamone, you have a great night. We will talk to you.
You guys take care. I'm going to say hello. You hardly get to talk to a fella. You just going to brush me off?
I got it. We got more.
We got to talk about the show.
We got more. We got to cover.
Oh, all right. I didn't want to talk to you guys anyway. Hooey, are you guys going to be doing live? Going to be live next weekend?
Yeah, I believe so.
Is Matt going to be back then?
Probably should be, yeah.
On the white YouTube, you do it on there?
No, we won't have YouTube for a while, no.
You can do that right there. You can do it right now.
No, we don't have that set up. All right, we got to get moving. Thanks, Lamone.
God bless you.
Have a good night.
Talking to you, Stephanie. Best of luck on your guys' future there, and I'm hoping to see you guys with some Emmys or something like that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
For the Oscars. God bless you guys. Ciao. Oh, tell them about the movie, The Killing of a... Moonflower.
We'll talk about that some other time. I gotta let you go. All right. That's Lamone in Las Vegas. Gotta catch our breath after a Lamone call. All right, let's get back into the show. So I'm seeing actually some comments on Twitter from people who say, I'd like to support them. I want to watch the show. I don't want to sign up for Fox Nation, even for a free trial. Mm-hmm. I gotta say, if you're worried about what you're giving Fox Nation for signing up for this. Think about what you're not giving to the people of Eloise that need to have these stories told. And I want to get into that because we really haven't covered that much. We really haven't covered what Eloise Asylum is all about and why it is a place that was worthy of spending multiple weeks there and filming an entire series in one location. Scott, you've had the opportunity to kind of come as close to Paranormal TV did before with that, where, you went from going to different asylums and different jails and all different places, different prisons, and going to a different place for each episode, to then with Haunted Towns, at least going to one town where the things might be connected. But what was it like for you to be able to go to one place and really do a deep dive case study on it?
Oh, man. I don't even know how to describe that. That's like a dream. That was one of the things that I'd always said I wanted to do. And, you know, having a place that has such a rich history. I mean, you know, Eloise, the insane asylum, the poorhouse, it was in operation from 1839 to 1982. And so it saw years of change in the people there, the treatment of people there, the technologies. And so trying to communicate with all these different spirits that are left there is a challenge as well. So you're having to go through and peel the layers back, because we've talked about the layers of a haunt being kind of like an onion. This is the biggest onion you've ever been able to work with. And so there's so many layers. It really gives you, by staying there this much, it gives you an opportunity to dig deeper into those layers and just become part of the location and build a relationship with all the spirits that are still there. And I think that's the part that's missing in a lot of investigations, where people just go in for a night or two or a week and then they're off to the next spot. We build relationships with these spirits.
And I think that that's something that really comes through, because there's a lot of, you see this from episode to episode, there's a lot of comfort building with the spirits there, where not just for yourselves to be more comfortable with what's going on, because I don't know that you're ever not unnerved from what I saw, but you can tell that more of them want to come forward and share their story with you the more that you are there and they realize what you are there for.
Yes. That's one of the things that Steph and I talked about too, is it's like once you made a connection with one spirit that was trying to tell a story, it was almost like all the others saw that and realized, hey, they're not leaving tomorrow.
Right.
They're here. I want them to tell my story. I want them to help me get what I need out there out. And I'm going to come and talk to them too. And you can see that displayed with Stephanie as she's in there. They're all screaming at her saying, hey, you know, talk to me.
Yeah, that was, I don't know if I'll ever be able to get that noise out of my head.
Well, you've been in a lot of places where there have been multiple spirits that have tried to reach out to you at once. I know I've been there when it's happened, but I don't think you've ever been at a place where there was, you know, 7,000 unnamed, lost to history souls that are looking for someone to tell their story all at one time.
7,000 that we knew about.
Right.
I think, and as you see from the show, and I know we talked about it being like an onion already, we had layer upon layer upon layer of not just the standing Eloise that we know today reach out to us, but other layers of history as well. The torture that went on there lent to those screams. The yelling at me of like, I need something from you. It was possibly the most overwhelming situation of my entire life. But you'll be able to see that I think we accomplished something, and I still feel like I could have done more, but we didn't have enough time to do more. And I'm really hoping that we get the opportunity to go back and continue telling this story. I think, and Scott and I have talked a lot about this throughout our filming, throughout the last year, and, you know, even throughout this past fall, where, you know, we're making our rounds and doing events and telling people about our experience. When you walk into a room, every single person, whether you have abilities or not, you know whether you feel like you're drawn to somebody or you're completely like just repelled and like, I don't want anything to do with that person. Like, I think I like them. I don't think I like them. And spirits are energy. They can feel those things far greater than we can. So they know what your intentions are before you walk into a building. A lot of people will say, you know, oh, I walked into this place and, I didn't get any activity, and somebody else was like, oh my God, I have so much. And they start to assume like, oh, well, I must be psychic because I'm getting the activity. It could just be that you are a good person, or they know that you have pure intentions in what it is that you're trying to accomplish. You're not there for a thrill ride. But even Scott and I having good intentions, walking in, how many film crews have they seen go through that place? You know, how many, whether it's the local news or a different TV show, how many tour groups, how many paranormal investigation groups have gone in there? On a busy Saturday night, especially during this time of the year, during Halloween, they have no less than 5,000 people walk through the first floor. So I can understand the animosity. I can understand the uncertainty. We really had to prove ourselves. Like, hey, like we would say before we left at that night, like, we'll be back tomorrow. And you don't really catch that on camera, obviously, because there's not enough time for it. But Scott and I said hi to them every time we walked in, even just the two of us walking in the side door alone, getting ready to go up to the production room. We would say hi. We would say goodbye when we left, because it's the right thing to do. These are people. It's not just, oh, we're just here to perform with you. Hope you perform on camera with us and we'll just see you later. We were really trying to break down into the deepest layer possible to figure out what was causing everything, but not ignoring everything along the way. You get to see, I think, especially in episodes 2 and 3, if I'm remembering correctly, really bringing some of those stories to life again. And, you know, being able to solve some of it, but not all of it.
Well, and that's something I want to ask you about, Scott, because you've dealt with this with the Ghost Asylum era where, you know, and I know this from being the person that was digging out these stories, but you're telling the stories of these victims who have died in these places, and you're telling the stories of some of the people who might have perpetrated abuse on them while they were patients in these facilities. And you're going to hear it. You're going to hear it from the descendants. You did do a great job of bringing in actual family members of some of these victims to come and talk on camera and try to help them get closure. But you know there will be some backlash from some people about the way that your investigation led to some character assumptions about these people that were involved. And so, I mean, how do you balance that with saying, hey, this is what we found, when somebody's saying, yeah, but that's my, you know, my grandfather or my great uncle that you're talking about?
You know, you don't know what it was like during that time. And people have different sides to them. You know, they could be the most wonderful person to you, and they may be the most awful person to someone else. But then again, it could be that someone else is telling a lie, or whatever the case might be. We don't have all the history and all the answers to go on. So what we have to do is rely on the information we're given and then look for clues in that history to either support or upend the notion that we're getting from what we've gathered. You know, and it's tough because some people want you just to leave it alone. Some people they want it to be buried and forgotten. And you know, but if there's a story there to be told, and something's trying to get that out, you know, you need to tell that story for someone. You know, it's not, you don't want to bring on a false image of someone. You want to try to get to the truth. And if I can't get to the truth, then all I can do is present you with facts and you can come up with the truth on your own.
And Stephanie, I'm sure that, you know, you're making a direct connection with some of these spirits. So you're able to kind of talk about who they are in a different way than a regular paranormal investigator would. But you're also still cognizant of that, of the fact that, you know, a lot of these decisions that were made at that time were of the era, and some of these people didn't know any better.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm just going to tell you a story, but I can't because it'll spoil things. But
I'm dancing around some things myself,
I know,
too. So
I know, yeah. It's so hard because I just want to have this just candid, full-blown, like, 12-year-olds at a sleepover conversation with you guys. But, you know, some of it, I think especially in the 4th episode, maybe.
What floor?
Huh?
You talking about the 4th floor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You definitely see my spiciness come out, which I'm sure you know exactly the moment I'm talking about. Where, yeah, it might have been norm at the time, but it doesn't mean I agree with it. And I let it be known exactly how I feel about it. And And I think, I mean, I didn't really hold back much about how I felt about the entire thing the entire time, really. But they definitely included that moment in there where I can hear it in my voice. And I remember the emotions I felt when I said it. And I was just like, you know what? It is what it is. That was raw emotion. But something that we were cognizant of the entire time was how, if you just searched on social media, or even a Google search about the location, I was not allowed to, but I forgot where we were, babe. And we had looked, like, somebody had posted something on social media about it, like a news source, about Eloise itself, and all of the comments underneath, I forgot. I think somebody showed it to us. Cause obviously we're not, you know, we don't have any connection to like Michigan social media. All of the comments underneath, no matter what the article was about, was just bashing everything to do with it because of what occurred there, and they're assuming people are disrespectful. So we really, really wanted to change that part. We wanted people to know that we might be here for this particular reason, and the owners might be the ones that wanted us here, but we're trying to do right by the patients, by the people that went through the absolute torture. We want to tell the real side of Eloise, not the side that is commonly told. One of the things that was told to us, and I can't remember who or what said it throughout the way that we were filming, because again, I wasn't allowed to like really know much about it. We know that they tested the first x-rays on people at this facility as a means of literally, quite literally, experimenting and testing to see how it worked. If you go to, like, I think it was a historical society, they praise Eloise. Everything about Eloise.
I picked that up from the person on camera, yeah.
I keep getting attacked by a fruit fly. Everything to do with Eloise, and like I walked into one of the places at one point, and it's like so many artifacts and like an entire Eloise room, and like, yeah, it's a huge part of history, but these people are so excited about it and like positive, and knowing what went on there, I can't stepping foot in that building.
I believe he says, you know, and they were testing, you know, chemotherapy on people and radiation to cure cancer. It's like, yeah, except they were radiating people.
Correct. They were literally burning people alive.
They didn't understand it. I mean, you know, it was a different time, and they had a different thought process.
And
to them, it was normal.
One of the, I can't remember which person it was that somebody interviewed, but it was almost hard for them to admit, like, well, yeah, I guess, you know, they were technically experimenting. Yeah, hell yeah, they were experimenting. Mm-hmm. Like, we know that they were, but I forgot how he put it exactly, but it was basically like, well, these were the type of people that I guess it would have been easier to experiment on. Yeah, but tell them why. Why were they easier to experiment on? Because they were dropped off and nobody cared about them. At the same time, what was going on during the fourth episode, which will answer this particular situation, the studies that they were doing about people and the thoughts that they had about certain people in society at that time basically meant they didn't care about these people.
Right.
So who cares if we
experiment? They were disposable before they even came there. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, it was almost like they were itching and hoping that they would get more of these people dropped off so that way they could continue whatever it is that they were doing. So we wanted to tell that story. We wanted people to know the truth behind Eloise, and we sat down and we talked about it one night.
And as we know, they diagnose people with things that we would have, you know, we would just consider just a, you
PMS.
Know, nothing. Yeah. But they would diagnose them with that so they could get them locked away and have them as experimental subjects.
Correct.
I know we're going to run out of time here, and I want to give you time to promote the couple of things that are coming up.
Yeah.
But I will say this, if you are somebody who doesn't watch paranormal TV, and I know that's probably not our audience listening, but maybe, you know, somebody in your family doesn't want to sit and watch this with you, I will also say it's very cinematic. It's every episode starts with like a little mini movie to kind of set the scene. So it's a very entertaining show.
Yeah.
And it's a beautifully shot show. And I think you will like it, even if the paranormal is something that you normally say, oh, those shows are a little bit too much for me. This one will not. This one will definitely suck you in. And I'm saying that, you know, as somebody who spends way too much time with the two of you anyway, and didn't want to have to sit through 6 more hours if I didn't have to. No, I'm just kidding. But if people do want to sit and spend some time with you and watch the show,
yes,
you actually have something coming up next week on Thursday where people can actually do that, Stephanie.
Yep. So we will be at the Alley Theater in Middleborough on October 26th. Doors open at 6. The event starts at 6:30. We'll be doing a watch party. We'll be doing a Q&A. So it's fine if you binge watch it the entire time before you get there. But an opportunity to kind of hang out with us, celebrate a little bit, and then we'll be telling some ghost stories. We'll be telling behind the scenes stuff about the show. I'm really excited about that. So that'll be Scott and I. I think you're busy that night, so you can't make it. You have a lecture.
I'll be in Sandwich, yeah.
So, but we're excited to do that. And then we're going back to Eloise.
Well, we'll get into that, but I don't know if Lorna mentioned to you, but she believes that the Alley Theater itself is haunted.
Yeah, I got to tell you that story.
All right. Well, let's make sure we get the plug in for the event itself. Yes. So, as you said, we're going back. Scott, you're going to get to see me and show me around Eloise and introduce me to your home away from home.
Yes, we are. We're going to be there November the 17th. Make sure I get that date off right. I have too many dates floating around in my head. But we're going to get out there, and it's going to be an opportunity for people to meet us, talk to us, and investigate with us the famous Eloise Asylum that you'll see and what we're digging into. And who knows, you may get to meet some of the spirits that we became friendly with there.
Now, as far as you two know, will you be able to go to all the same areas that are featured in the show, or...?
Almost all.
Most. Okay.
Yeah.
Almost all. Mm-hmm.
I think the only one that you will see in the show that we will not be going to is the basement and the haunt.
For sure. Yeah, I figured that would probably be not part of it, but
right. All
these, you know, the fifth floor, the fourth floor, these are all places that people will go and investigate. Fifth.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just for safety reasons, too. So.
Well, that sounds like a heck of a time. So, Stephanie, tell everybody how they can find tickets for both of those.
So you can actually go to any of our social medias. The easiest way to see all the events that we have going is go to societyevents.eventbrite.com. And society is spelled SOC13TY, events.eventbrite.com.
Another really easy way to get a link to both is go to WBSM.com and read the story about the show that we have up there. And there's links in there for both of those as well, so that you'll be able to get your tickets for the Alley Theater for Thursday and get your tickets if you want to join the three of us in Michigan at Eloise Asylum itself. And you told me, you warned me, Stephanie, so let me just tell the story real quickly. She sent me a message on Facebook one day and said, you know, would you like to go to Eloise Asylum with us? And I was like, I've never even heard of that, because you guys did not violate your NDAs. You did not tell me anything about the show except for, you know, you've got to see this when it comes out. And so I didn't know that that's where you filmed. And I said, I've never heard of it. And you said, well, you know, you might want to look into it. So I left here and I went to go present at the Lakeville Senior Center about the Bridgewater Triangle. As I'm packing up and getting ready to leave, a woman grabs my arm and says, hey, have you ever been to Eloise Asylum? And I looked at her and I said, why would you say that to me right now? And she like looked all shocked and she's like, I've just been interested in it. And then a couple of days later, a guy called into my morning show and said, just is totally off topic, but have you ever looked into Eloise Asylum? And I was like, what? This is getting too weird.
Yeah.
And as Stephanie said, you know, you expect that to happen. And Scott, you say it on the show. Are you looking into Eloise, or is Eloise looking into you? So
it'll draw you in.
It's really creepy. And once you watch the show, you'll be able to know just how incredibly immersed we were, to the point where it was absolutely looking into us far more than we were looking into it. So
I would almost argue that watching the show is a prerequisite to attending that event.
I think
it's a must.
For sure. Yeah. It explains a lot.
It's a must.
I think you'll have a much better, much different experience if you go in there armed with that, because this is your chance to jump back into the story with Stephanie and Scott with their return for the first time there since they were filming. So
absolutely.
you get to be there as they are now trying to further that investigation. So should be a very special night, and looking forward to it.
And we're looking forward to continuing some of those experiments that we started too.
And what we also need is we need everybody to watch it, everybody to sign up to Fox Nation. When you sign up for Fox Nation, jump on to Secrets of the Asylum first so that the algorithm knows that that's what you were most interested in when you went there. And just send them letters, send them emails, tweet them, send them messages on Facebook, put it up on social media, say you want more of Secrets of the Asylum because they haven't finished telling those secrets yet.
No, and honestly, spoiler alert, or maybe just a little secret in itself. We filmed far more than what made it to TV.
Wow.
So.
Yes.
So there could be more
there
coming.
Very well could be more.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Scott, for joining us. And of course, you know, you're welcome here anytime. Look forward to hanging out with you in November. And I know you'll be up here next week. Maybe we can catch up, even though I'm all over the place this week.
That's fine. We'll find time for dinner.
We'll figure it out.
All right. And if anybody wants to come out and see me, I'll be in North Providence at the North Providence Library on Monday talking Ghosts of the Bridgewater Triangle. That's probably my closest one coming up this week. I'll be in Bridgewater on Tuesday. I'm all over the place next week. So just check out my Facebook page and I'll have it all up there. That's going to do it for us for this week. Thank you all for joining us for the return of Spooky South Coast. Have a great week. Make sure you watch Secrets of the Asylum. And as always, stay spooktacular.